Right now we're speaking with Eric White, and I'm super happy that he's back up here in the county and going to tell us about his trip. How are you doing, man?
Doing good. Feels great to be back.
First of all, we should say that we've had you on before because you had an interesting trip around Lake Superior a couple years back.
Yep. That was the first one. Right after I graduated college, I kayaked around Lake Superior solo in a 14 and a half foot kayak that I got from Stone Harbor in town, used.
So did you feel like you needed to do something else to maybe not one up that, but continue that adventureness?
I guess kind of. It's more like these big trips just get a little addicting. Something about being, I don't know if it's being like alone or just kind of all the like freedom you have, you know, when you're out there. I mean, you're just paddling the whole day. You can stop and start whenever you want.
Yeah.
Something about that. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I wasn't really planning on doing another trip necessarily, but I just started aching for it. So
just kind of on a whim and then it just...
Kinda, you know, I just was like, oh, I kind of feel like doing something big. Oh, the Mississippi's a big river. Guess I'll do that.
Yeah. So what did you do to prepare for this?
Very similar to my Superior trip. I prepared myself for a lot of paddling, if that makes sense. You know, I had all the gear, made sure it all worked. I have a lot of experience camping and doing these overnight trips and paddling long days. But as far as specific planning for the trip, I kind of just made sure this time that I had good maps, you know, that there wasn't anything big that I was going to miss, you know, like operating the locks. Like I did some research on that to make sure I knew how to get through more or less. But other than that, you know, the trip's just so big, it's hard to plan, you know, where you're going to stop each night and all the little fine details. It's a lot easier, I've found, to kind of plan the trip out and make it work as you go. And as I'm going down the river and as I get closer and closer to different places, different cities, you know, then I'll start mapping it, you know, oh, I'm going to stop in Davenport, you know, and grab a beer and a burger. That's kind of something I crave every now and then, you know, but...
So tell me about how you started the journey and the canoe that you were using.
So the canoe is kind of a fun one. A little ridiculous, not super aerodynamic or efficient, but I took a a Dolphin Chief canoe is what it's called. And it's a canoe that I found on Craigslist 3 days before the first day of the trip. And the story there is... about a week before I started the trip, my sister messaged me and was like, Eric, I want to join you for a bit. And I really wanted some company, you know, and my sister's awesome and adventurous and all that stuff. So I wanted to make it work. But all I had was, you know, my kayak that I took on Superior. So I had to find something that we could both use. So I went on Craigslist and found this beautiful boat. But yeah, the Dolphin Chief is special because it, not only does it look beautiful, despite its kind of ridiculous size and construction.
Very like classic looking.
Very classic looking, yeah. It's kind of like a vintage one. It was manufactured by, you know, this canoe manufacturing company. from what I found just briefly on the internet, in Wabasha, Minnesota, which is right on the Mississippi. So it's kind of like a Mississippi boat. And so that's how I decided to take it.
So you started from Itasca. When did you kick it off?
Actually, I started from Brainerd, Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason for not starting in Itasca was I was starting you know, a little later in the season than's probably ideal. October 5th was the start date, and that's because I was on a month-long trip in Nepal before that.
Did you get, like, travel whiplash from that? Or
a little bit. You know, Nepal's all, like, hiking straight up and down mountains, so my legs got really... strong and in shape, and then all of a sudden I sat in a canoe for 40 days, so it was kind of weird.
Just atrophy.
Yeah, not the most thought out plan, I guess. But so I started in Brainerd because that section from Itasca to Brainerd, I had been warned could take anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 weeks, even though if you look on a map, it's not a very big section.
Yeah, that's
it's just what I was warned.
Super surprising. Is that just because it's very like dog leggy and boat around.
I think it's partly that. Partly it's just so small at the mouth. You're going through reeds, it gets shallow, there's different portages. It sounds gorgeous. Like it sounds like it would be a really beautiful section to do. But given the fact that I was starting October 5th, you know, and Minnesota gets cold pretty quick that time of year. Right. So I kind of wanted to make time and get farther south as opposed to getting bogged down up north. I didn't really have a destination as much as a time limit I kind of imposed on myself. I decided and kind of told my mom that I would be home by Thanksgiving. So that's how the trip started.
That's adorable.
All right, thanks.
So what were some of the challenges that you found going down? How did you deal with like dams?
Between Brainerd and Minneapolis, that's where all the dams are. And dams, you have to portage around them. But the DNR does an incredible job maintaining this water trail, you know, very similar to what they do in Minnesota on Superior. So they had a really great map that was well marked with everything you need to know from, you know, when you're paddling. They had kind of marked, if not the whole portage around the dams, because a lot of times they'd go through cities, you know. But they would mark the entrance, you know, there'd be a sign with a canoe on it saying portage. Mm-hmm. So that was really, you know, great. And then they also maintained these campsites all along the shore. So an incredible resource that I would imagine is underutilized. But anyway, so that was before Minneapolis. And then after Minneapolis, St. Paul, you have locks, kind of lock and dams. So those you can navigate. With a small craft, what you do is you either call in, you know, on your cell phone, or you can use a radio and radio in. But then also, if you don't have either of those, you can just paddle right up, and there's like a cord that you can pull at all these locks.
Huh.
And so you paddle up, you know, past this big concrete breakwater, pull a cord, sounds a horn, and then they just like open up this lock for you, which is kind of cool.
That sounds super cool. It sounds like a very like archaic system.
It
like
kind of is
going through some old trade route or something.
Well, yeah, that's, and you feel a little, it's weird, you know, like I felt a little out of place doing it in a canoe, but the lock operators, lock masters, whatever you want to call them, I mean, they're great and super friendly. A lot of times they'd throw a rope down and I'd tie up my water bottle, they bring it up and fill it for me, you know, and all that. So I mean, it was a lot of great
full service
like that. Yeah. So that was wonderful. And the lock and dams extend from, so there's 27 of them, something like that. And it goes from Minneapolis, St. Paul to St. Louis. They're all in that stretch of the river.
So if you're joining us right now, we're talking to Eric White. He just got back from a trip canoeing down the Mississippi from Brainerd to Memphis. And so you were with your sister for the first part of the journey, camping out. And then at what point did she depart and you went solo from there?
So Winona, but so she left me there and then I continued on my own. And so at that point I just started using my kayak paddle, taking the Dolphin Chief down. And
you're rather canoeing with a kayak paddle, that big old canoe that was for two people.
Yeah, because it was a really big canoe, really slow, and the kayak paddle just, it was so much more efficient, mm-hmm. you know, and so much easier to use.
So about how far did you go each day?
It really depended. I actually, when I was with my sister, we had some incredible weather. I mean, just the river was glass. You know, we were just enjoying this nice, gentle current. High water, so the current was pretty fast. But after she left, and really my whole way through Iowa, I was getting blasted by really strong headwinds. I mean, some days it was like 20 to 30 miles an hour, which is not really something I was expecting. And the waves were actually a bit intense, which is something else I kind of underestimated. But anyway, I would go about, I'd say 30 to 40 miles a day before St. Louis. And then after St. Louis, when the current picked up a bit and I had some better weather, it was closer to 40 to 50 miles a day.
Like what you mentioned earlier, when getting food and beer in Davenport. So what do you do with your canoe when you stop in towns and see the sights?
So it's something you get used to the farther that you get on the trip, you know, or used to, or I don't know, you know, like basically I would just pull up to these either boat ramps or sometimes maybe like there was a restaurant or a business on the shore that had a dock, and I'd find someone and ask if it'd be okay if I could tie my boat up. Yeah, you just kind of leave everything there and just hope no one's going to mess with it. You know, and I always kind of think about it too. It's like everything I have is really muddy and really, really used. And the Dolphin Chief, kudos to anyone that could steal that thing. I mean, that thing's like
if you steal really this, you
bulky.
It.
Yeah, if you want it that bad, you can have it.
That's great.
But I don't know. Same on Superior, like you need to resupply. Part of the fun of these trips is exploring the cities you go through. You know, it kind of adds this other element to the natural wildlife refuges you're going through and all that part of the trip. You know, it's kind of fun seeing the sights, the scenes.
So if there was one experience from going into those towns along the river, what would you choose?
Well, I had a couple of interesting ones, but the most fun story I have was actually at the tail end of Iowa in this town called Keokuk, which is, I believe, the southernmost town in Iowa. But anyway, there's a huge lock there. You drop some like 39 feet. So it takes a while for these barges to go, you know, in and out of it. And on the day that I was paddling up to it, it was super windy. There were waves everywhere. And so it took me a while to get to the lock. And when I did get to it around 4 o'clock, there was a like 4 hour wait. So they weren't going to be able to get me through until, you know, 2 hours after dark, which wasn't really great. And the other issue with that was where I was, there was nowhere to camp, which was one of the few points of the trip where I just had nowhere to pitch my tent because there was a railroad on one side and a highway on the other. So I wasn't panicking, but I was a little, you know, freaking out. And so I look at my map and I see a marina and I give it a call and I get this cheery bartender on the phone and he, you know, I explain my situation to him and he's like, oh yeah, come on over. Like, no problem. You can pitch your tent in the marina, blah, blah, blah. And, so I paddle on over and, when I show up to the marina, not only the bartender, but everyone in the bar comes out to greet me. So it was quite the welcome party.
Yeah. Welcome wagon.
And so that was really fun. And then, you know, they're all helping me kind of get everything out and some wonderful guy offers up his like boathouse, you know, right on the water. So it's like a garage, but on the water. So I paddled into it. And then there's a carpeted floor in there and heat and electricity and a fridge and a bathroom and all these incredible amenities that I'd been without for so long. So I was really fortunate there. Then they had a shower they let me use. So I showered. And as if that wasn't great enough, it was taco night at the marina. Because this marina kind of turned out to be like a local hangout in Keokuk, you know, so it was just kind of, you know, people who own boats, but also just people who were there to hang out were there. So we had taco night and, you know, I had a couple of Guinnesses and, you know, I'm about to go to bed and then suddenly everyone's whipping out poker chips and stuff. And they're about to have like a poker night because apparently that's what they do on Thursdays in Keokuk, Iowa. So, you know, took a little convincing, but I eventually, you know, signed up for the tournament and ended up winning the tournament.
For cash.
It was like a $10 buy-in and walked away with like $150.
That was nice when you have like just doing things down. Oh my God.
It was pretty incredible. So I, you know, went from being like kind of trapped on the river, not knowing what I was going to do, worrying I was going to have to like camp on, you know, the railroads or whatever, to having a wonderful place to stay, a warm meal, a shower, and $150 in my pocket. So that was a pretty fun experience, you know.
Keokuk, Iowa, look it up.
Yeah.
What was the river traffic like? Were you finding other people adventuring or kind of doing similar things?
So, That kind of shocked me, and I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that I started in, you know, October. But I only saw one other paddler on the whole trip. And we'd see, you know, some people out fishing every now and then and the barge traffic. You know, I'd say you'd see 2 to 3 barges a day before St. Louis and then probably closer 5 to 6, maybe a little more after St. Louis where the barge traffic picks up a bit. But yeah, other than that, it was just me. you know, doing a trip like this solo, you're just a little more inclined to reach out and meet people. So I did. I you know, everywhere I'd stop, I'd be talking to whoever it was, you know, whether it's the server at the restaurant I'm at or someone at the marina who, or boat launch that sees my ridiculous looking boat with the dolly sticking up.
You mentioned the solitude and how that was something you really enjoyed about it. Why is that?
Just because, you know, like you never get that experience elsewhere in life. At least I don't. You know, just being alone. The best example of that is, you know, from Cairo, which is, I haven't talked about it yet, but my dad joined me for 5 days just past St. Louis. And right after he left me in Cairo, which is where the Ohio, you know, meets the Mississippi, I went 7 days without seeing another human being.
Wow.
Which is cool. I mean, like you never have that experience. And I'm not saying it's like the best way to do life or anything, but it's a cool experience to have, you know? So, I don't know.
Makes you appreciate when you do have people around.
Oh, it does. I mean, when I got to Memphis, Memphis was the end of my not seeing people. Like all of a sudden just being in a city and seeing people walking on the street was so cool. Like, I was so into that. So then, yeah, you talk about meeting people and I was probably annoying and talking to people a little too much because I hadn't talked to anyone in so long, but it's fun. And I really, really appreciate that aspect of these trips. And yeah, like you said, how it makes you appreciate what we do have.
What was probably the biggest challenge that you faced?
The biggest challenge was, believe it or not, it was the daylight.
Really?
Yeah. That was in my mind, the hardest like factor mentally, but also just kind of time-wise and finishing the trip. Because I'd wait, you know, the sun would rise maybe like 7:30 in the morning, something like that. And daylight savings happened somewhere in the trip. So my timing's kind of weird or my time, but, you know, it rise at like 7:30 and then set at like 6, I want to say. And it just wasn't that much time, you know, whereas on Superior, I had like 16 hours of daylight to deal with. You know, here I had much less. So I ended up having to wake up every morning in the complete darkness, you know, with a little bit of frost on the tent and stuff and seeing my breath. And then I'd eat handfuls of granola while I packed everything up and kind of like slap my hands, you know, get some body, keeping them warm while I'm doing it all. And then you start right as the first rays of sunlight are kind of creeping into the sky. And then you go the whole day. And then I would start making camp as the sun set. And by the time I was eating my dinner, it was completely dark again, you know, and I'd be in my tent then at like 6:30 and have a couple hours just to sit there and read.
Wow. So that brings up another question. Just how did you do with food? I imagine you weren't getting burgers and beer.
No, very infrequently. Yeah, no, it was, on these trips, I eat very simply. I eat granola every single morning. I kind of snack throughout the day on summer sausage, cheese, peanut butter tortillas, granola, you know, dried fruit and all that good stuff. And then at night I'd eat beans and rice. Yeah, you know, not really. Just that I ate, I counted it up and I had 31 meals of beans and rice out of those 40 days. So 31 cans of beans, a lot.
No Mexican food for you for a while.
No,
maybe.
No. No rice.
Well, you ended the trip in Memphis. I know the original plan was to go down to New Orleans and that just became too much.
You know, talking about planning again, you know, like we touched on before, my planning was really just me kind of being like, oh, well, New Orleans would be a cool place to make it. And actually, when I started, the quote unquote plan had been St. Louis. I was like, oh, St. Louis will be a good place to make it, you know, because that's kind of the halfway mark distance wise on the Mississippi. And so I figured it'd be a sweet place to stop. But then I made it to St. Louis fast enough that I had enough time to go farther. And I was like, well, you know, Memphis sounds kind of cool. And all I really knew about Memphis was, you know, Paul Simon's Graceland. And I was like, well, that's enough. That sounds like a cool place to me. So so I paddled down singing Graceland to myself, you know.
Well, that's awesome, man. I'll ask this first. What did you get the most out of it, or what was the most rewarding part?
The most rewarding part is it's in my opinion, like a better understanding of the places I was going through and kind of like the Midwest in a sense, you know. I'm not saying I understood at all from going down the Mississippi, but I always found like Superior too. You know, when you spend that much time on a lake, you know, with so much time just thinking while you paddle, you know, you just and kind of like a, just seeing everything around you and every town you stop in, you know, you really just because you really want a meal or you really want to just take a break from the canoe, you check out museums, you check out stuff like that. So, you know, paddling such a long distance, you know, and seeing so many states, I think it's how many states was it? It was 8, I mean, like Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Missouri, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas.
Yeah,
that's yeah, it. I think that's it. I stopped right before Mississippi. So eight states, you know. I mean, that's there's so much history there. And there's so variety of people, of towns, of all that stuff. So I don't know. That's something you just I just really appreciate when I'm paddling and seeing it all from that perspective.
Do you have any further plans for upcoming adventures or what would you like to do next?
Well, it's kind of like after I finished Superior, I didn't really have any plans, but I really enjoyed going down the river. The current was really cool, but then also kind of seeing a lot more of the cities, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of exploring this awesome country that we all live in. So the next kind of shorter trip that I'm thinking of is maybe like the Tennessee River, you know, see Chattanooga, Knoxville, you know, some of the Civil War sites like Shiloh and stuff, and then ending in the Ohio and on the Ohio River. So yeah, you know, something like that might be next on the docket.
Well, thanks for the interview. I'm sure it was a great trip. The beard looks great.
Thank you.
And we hope to be seeing more of you up here and hearing from you very soon. So we've been talking to Eric White about his trip down the Mississippi.